making right to work a priority, what Republicans are thinking, the union response, who benefits from the State Fair Relief Fund and the Amazon tax, that plus iPads for lawmakers and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending November 25, 2011.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, Republican leaders in the Indiana General Assembly announced plans to make right-to-work legislation a priority in 2012. House Speaker Brian Bosma and Senate GOP leader David Long made a joint announcement to pursue the legislation that says no one is required to join a union to get or keep a job. Democrats prevented a vote in February by going to Illinois, a move that prompted daily labor rallies at the State House for 5 weeks and eventually led the governor to ask that the issue be studied over the summer. It was, and now GOP leaders say it will help create jobs.
I don't expect a free-for-all. I do expect an intense debate. There are very strongly held feelings on this issue.
This effort is not and does not seek to eliminate unions in our state, nor will unions be eliminated in our state.
We may be in a minority, but we have a duty to protect ourselves against the tyranny of the majority.
Can the right to work bill be stopped this time? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Rebecca Piercy, Republican Mike McDaniel, Leslie Weidenbender, editor at the Franklin College News Bureau, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Rebecca Piercy, will Democrats walk out again?
I don't think they'll walk out. I think that Democrats and our union friends are going to stand up on this, and it'll be an issue that will largely be seen as divisive, but they're not going to back down. I would like to see a legislature that is more focused on creating jobs and lowering wages for everyday Hoosiers that are in a union or not in a union.
But you're outnumbered. Is there anything that you can do to stop this?
I don't know that the votes are there. I don't know that we can stop it, but I think that the passion will be there. You may not see folks in the State House every day, but certainly earlier this week there was a good showing of union folks in the buildings.
Why did Republicans roll this out the way they did? They held a news conference on less than an hour's notice. Were they worried about a union protest to the news conference?
No, I don't think that was it. I think they had to get everybody in their own groups together to make sure that everybody was on the same page. And they finally did that. And that once they did that, they decided to move forward with it. And since they were going to roll it out and talk about it in general terms on Organization Day, it was smart to do it the day before instead of waiting until Organization Day to do it. But they could have waited until Organization Day, Jim, and not did it that way. Then the unions wouldn't have had any notice whatsoever. But they did it the day before.
But didn't they treat it? They treated it like it's a hot potato.
Well, it is a hot potato. Everybody knows that. It caused 5 weeks of walkout in the last session of legislature, and it was pulled with the idea being that it hadn't been fully vetted as an issue, and they did that over the summer. And the commission looked at it, and it was studied. Both sides made arguments. There was a party line vote at the end of that study this summer. And so, it is a hot potato. Everybody knows it. So why wouldn't you treat it that way?
I'm not exercised about the timing of the press conference or how little notice there was. But it is important to note that reporters had to scramble to get to that press conference. And we got 40 minutes notice about
so?
It, but all the interest groups had press releases ready. So I don't care about it, but it isn't fair to say that they, at the very last second, got it together and put everything together. And I'm just saying, though, they gave a lot of other groups notice before they did to the media.
Well, they're part of the coalition.
I think they wanted to avoid having a bunch of union folks show up and try to disrupt the press conference, which... to be fair to the Republicans, that's exactly what would have happened. It would have been almost impossible to have that press conference if the union folks would have known about it.
So you think they handled it properly?
I think they did the best they could.
Interesting to me, the governor has been silent on this so far. Does that surprise you?
No, I think he's kind of waiting to see how this situation plays out. If you'll recall last time when the right to work issue came up late in the week, had a weekend, the issue got pulled, the governor was conciliatory, and then the Democrats essentially said, oh, but we also have these other issues, and the whole thing went into the tank. I think the governor has learned from that, is taking a measured approach, and I think he's waiting to see what will happen. He's waiting to see if the Democrats will decide that the best strategy is to leave or the best strategy is to stay, fight with everything they have, and then take it out on the campaign trail.
Speaker Brian Bosma has put together television ads that will start airing over the weekend, trying to build public support for this idea. Does he need public support at this point?
Absolutely, he needs public support on this. And the fact that the governor's support is tepid at this point should be pretty telling to everyday Hoosiers. Right to work has failed in the Midwest. Ohio?
They had a referendum and
right.
overturned
it. It wasn't even about this. It was apples and dump trucks compared to this to what they're talking about. They were talking about in Ohio. Let me straighten some things out here. One, the governor hasn't been silent on this. He's been interviewed three or four times where he even quoted Mitch Robe from his testimony from this summer, where Mitch Robe, the head of the Indiana Economic Development Commission, said that at least one-fourth to one-third of the people that come to Indiana to even look at bringing jobs here turn away because we're not a right-to-work state. So he's been quoted on that.
Sure, but Mitch Daniels has always been a supporter of the idea of right-to-work.
Which he still is a supporter of the idea.
But he didn't like the strategy earlier this year. He hasn't spoken up on the strategy.
Well, I don't think he cares about the strategy this year. I think he's fine with it. He said that they didn't run on it. They went out. They made it very clear that they want to, that this is something they want to do. I don't think Daniels has a problem with it, but he doesn't need to be a leader here.
And as far as air cover is concerned, you're the first to unveil that. I hope you know that. But that is a product of Brian Bosma, who has taken on a lot of tough issues over a lot of years, including things like, you know, major moves and a lot of other things without any air cover, has decided that if you're going to have a session where it's going to be disruptive like this will be because of this issue and the union support, you better go out and do that. And they've also done their survey work. Their survey was taken a week ago, 800 sample survey. It shows 65% of Hoosiers think this is a good idea, favorite. 28% are opposed. So it's not a divisive issue like it's being portrayed to be. It's overwhelmingly favorable for this particular legislation.
All right, still with Right to Work. Union workers flooded the State House this week on Organization Day in the General Assembly. The show of union force was organized in just 24 hours after the GOP leaders identified Right to Work as their top priority. Speaker Brian Bosma made no direct mention of Right to Work in a speech to the House, but everyone knew what he was talking about.
We need to do whatever's necessary to attract more employers to our state and having the difficult discussions that will result and get us there.
Do you think you can stop it?
Yes.
How?
Persuasion. I think if you make the case, reasonable people will agree with it.
You're going to be here every day like you were last year?
You know, I think what we do during the session kind of remains to be seen, but we're certainly encouraging members to reach out both here and in the districts to their elected officials and let them know how this impacts them.
Nancy Guy out of the AFL-CIO there, preceded by Jim Robinson of the United Steelworkers Union. Mike McDaniel, do you expect daily rallies this year?
Probably. The short session being a short session, it's easier to do it in a short session when the session has to be over by March 14th than it would be in a longer session. But Nancy Guy is a pro at what she does. She does a good job for her group in organizing and turning people out. It's not going to make a difference this time. The votes are just not there for them. And I think public support being what it is for this legislation is going to make it even more difficult for them.
They clog the hallways. They make a lot of noise. Any concern from a Democratic point of view that this might actually backfire?
I don't think so. I think most of these folks are there to see their members, and they're also in the districts meeting with their members. And I think the show of support in the State House in masses is helpful. Helpful to help educate a lot of other people that might not know enough about right to work to make a decision about it. Not legislators, but general public.
Will this block out all other issues?
No, I don't think so, because I think that it will if the Democrats decide to leave. Okay, if that's the case, then it's all off. But I don't think that's going to happen, and I do think that there are other issues that will get considered this year. I think there's some loose ends that want to be tied up, and there's some fiscal policy issues that need to be taken care of, so I think that they'll get to that. And I really think that the strategy is going to be to try to do the persuasion, to try to do the public education, because the poll that Mike cites is true, then they have a lot of work to do, and I think they're about trying to do that.
So is it possible, do you think, that unions might be doing their own TV ads before this is over?
Sure. I wouldn't be surprised by that at all. And I actually think, I really don't know what the union strategy is going to be, but I wouldn't be surprised if they tried to take the message back into the districts more instead of focusing just exclusively at the State House.
Yeah.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, are Republicans risking their agenda by pursuing right to work? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, what agenda? Last week's question was, does Indianapolis need a stronger smoking ban in time for the Super Bowl? 31% said yes, 38% said no, 31% said why is the Super Bowl a factor? If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. The State Fair Commission says 28 victims from the stage collapse tragedy qualified to receive money from the $978,000 Victims Relief Fund. A total of 56 people applied for compensation. Victims had to spend a minimum of one day and one night in the hospital to qualify. Some criticized the strict guidelines.
It is an attempt by the state of Indiana, as we did in Virginia Tech, as we did with 9/11, frankly, to come up with a formula that tries to do right by people in need. Is it perfect? No. Could others think of a different way? Yes. We do the best we can.
Ken Feinberg there, the attorney handling the fund. Does that seem like a good plan, Leslie Weidenbender?
I think that any time you try to put objective measurements on something as subjective as how much somebody might have been injured, how much work they might be missing, those kinds of things, then on injuries, then you're always going to have questions. I'm not sure whether this is the best thing or not. I do agree that there could have been other ways, and there would have been critics no matter what method they would have come up with.
So you can't win.
No, that's absolutely right. I think Leslie's hit the nail right on the head. And really the unfortunate thing is that there's really a limited amount of money, because there's no doubt that those 56 people who were injured and made claims, now I don't know the veracity of all of them, but I'm assuming that there are more legitimate claims than just the 28. Those people were seriously hurt and deserve compensation, and that's really the unfortunate thing.
Well, there was also a class action lawsuit filed this week by 48 victims. That's really where the compensation is going to come from, in all likelihood, correct?
Yeah, I agree with that. And one thing that we should also talk a little bit about is, you know, we need to do as good of a job with the figuring out why this happened as we are with the compensation on this.
You don't think that's being done?
I think it is, but I think it's people are waiting.
It's going to well. I think it's going to take time. It's going to take time. Is this a public relations problem at this point?
No. Well, I shouldn't say no that quickly. It's always a public relations problem. Trying to sort out for the public the difference between the people that were compensated out of this fund versus the ones who can now sue all of the other people that might have some action in this particular event.
Yeah.
And there's a whole different.
And this is, just to clarify, this is the fund that came from public donations.
Right.
There's a separate $5 million state fund.
And it's just as Leslie said and John said, you had to draw the line somewhere. They did that. That's been distributed. Now the real fight will come with the lawsuit that's filed by the 46 different folks.
That seeks money from Sugar Land.
And so that is a problem because a lot of the public doesn't understand that there's a difference there.
Sure.
And they might think it's unfair that some of these folks didn't get money, but there is a chance that that'll happen down the road.
Moving on. The Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute released a study this week that shows Indiana is losing an estimated $77 million in sales tax money each year because it's not collected by companies engaged in e-commerce. John Ketzenberger, this is your study. Why?
No videotape.
No, we got you here. We got you here. We don't need videotape.
Thank you, Jim.
You're welcome. Why are you bringing this up now?
Well, because this is a long-time question, you know, this notion of whether there's a level playing field when it comes to collection of sales tax. And as federal court ruling from 20 years ago pointed out, if you don't have a physical presence in a state, then you don't have to collect that tax. So Amazon, for instance, has a 7% price break over your neighborhood store. And there has long been a question about two things. One, whether there's lost money by the state because of this and how much. And two, whether or not if you require that tax be collected by these internet retailers, it will cause them to locate their facilities in other places. We determined that the state loses $77 million and that it probably won't make any difference where those folks locate. So hopefully then we can get down to the public policy question of tax equity.
But you're not making recommendations. You're not suggesting solutions.
No, we're saying that they should have that discussion and get to the point of whether or not you want to have tax equity. So we're not saying they should pass any particular bill, but they need to solve that problem.
All right, but who needs to solve it? Is this a state question or is it a federal question?
Well, there are two problems with this issue. One is that very issue of is it a state or federal issue? And part of the problem that places like Amazon, Overstock, eBay, part of their issue with all this is trying to deal with all 50 states. And you're not just dealing with 50 states, you're dealing with, in some cases, city sales taxes, county sales taxes.
Right.
So really, if you handle it, if Congress would handle this at the federal level, then it would make things simpler for the businesses and for the states. The second problem, though, is this is a real anti-tax climate. This is not a tax increase. It is the way the tax is collected. People are supposed to be paying it now. If you buy something online and Amazon doesn't collect it, you're supposed to pay
it
yourself.
In fact, what the Fiscal Policy Institute pointed out was that in Indiana, $3 million are paid by people who volunteer the
right.
payment.
But that's a far cry from the $77
million. Right.
And so, but that's a big issue. And so, I mean, that complicates everything.
Would this be viewed, if states began enforcing this, would it be viewed as a tax increase?
It will be by some people who think that you should never vote for anything that would cause tax increases. But this is something the states have to do. The states being in the financial situations they're in, you know, the $77 million doesn't count another $77 million for catalog sales. And Senator Luke Kinley of Noblesville, who is heading up the coalition of, what is it, John, 26 or 24 states around the country called Streamline Tax States, those are states where we've come to an agreement on what all the taxes are. So candy would be taxed the same in all of those states. And that's important. So when that coalition goes to Congress, they can say that these 26 states are in agreement, so it makes it easier for Congress to deal with this so that hopefully they'll turn things around. Kinley's going out there at the end of this month to testify in favor of this. So he believes that it's a $200 million hit for Indiana. And $200 million for the state government right now that could go to education, could go to any one of a number of things, would make a huge difference.
Or so, as some Republicans want to do, cut a tax.
Well, that's a problem. I mean, you could
enforce this and cut another tax.
Look, the argument is it's not fair to the bricks and mortar
right.
retailers.
That's frankly the guy on Main Street
who has to collect that tax, people buying stuff online and don't, mm-hmm. you know, is it fair? No. Will they collect this tax? I hope so.
You think Congress is interested in taking this up?
I don't think Congress is interested in taking this up, no. I think it would definitely make it easier on, and it would help the states not have to do this themselves, cobble this together, sort of a patchwork quilt, if you will. Every state's got to have a different rule. If Congress did it, it would make it a lot easier. Yeah.
And what we saw in Congress this week with the failure of the super committee would suggest that there's not a big appetite there for anything that would raise revenue,
no.
right?
And that's why you're seeing all these individual states start to try to
do their own
find
thing.
Creative ways yeah. to force these companies to pay the tax or collect.
I think
the
Congress
tax.
Will deal with it either, if not this year, next year, because states are crying too loud not to.
All right. So, John, for your research to be worthwhile, what has to happen?
Well, I think, first of all, it's worthwhile on its face, Jim. Let's get that straight.
Well, that's,
but secondly,
I think that
there will be public policy changes, and I think that has to happen, and hopefully this will help that process.
Can I say that I think that research is very valuable, and by bringing this issue and raising this issue is good for everybody. They did a great service for policymakers in the state by doing that.
Some state lawmakers are about to get iPads. The iPads will go to members of two committees, one in the House and one in the state Senate, as part of a pilot program to save money on paper costs. It's estimated that the General Assembly uses 17 tons of paper a year, an average of 46 pounds per lawmaker. The cost is $500,000. The Legislative Council approved the purchase of iPads this week at the recommendation of Senator Brant Hirschman.
iPads are cheaper than the laptops that legislators are currently provided with, so we might have an opportunity to save some money there too. And based upon our initial tests, they have proven to be very effective tools for legislators to use in lieu of carrying around a lot of paper.
Rebecca Piercy, is that a good move?
I think it's a great move. I think it's a way to streamline and cut down on paper costs. I think they need to look at expanding this next year.
Do you think the average state legislator can operate an iPad?
Wow.
Don't know how to answer that.
The answer is yes.
I just wanted to see if you were really a politician.
The iPad is a fixed cost. That's the other thing. The iPad is a fixed cost. It is not going to go beyond the data supply, right? The data costs every month and what the actual machine costs. So the paper supply, it's going to be helpful.
It's also cheaper than the laptops that they get now.
It is also, this is the product of Brant Hirschman pushing this, the chairman of the Senate Taxation Committee, and he probably more than anybody else brings more people from outside to do testimony and that kind of thing. Every testimony you ever go to, I've seen Leslie covering meetings there, where people carry in these big bulky reports. Everybody wants to pass one out to every member. Yeah. I mean, you can submit this to them online. They can look at it at their leisure. This is a smart way to go.
And it's so much better for the public, because once lawmakers are really reliant on everything being online and being available that way, then the public can get it too.
Sure. Well, but that is an issue, because we've all been to meetings at the State House where somebody comes in with a new proposal and they don't want anybody to see it until it's time to be presented. And there are going to be issues about releasing information and about keeping information secret.
But you know what? That's always, there's always that tension there, and we've got new ground here because of the electronic availability. But I think that this could actually work in the favor of more disclosure, because they'll say, look, if you're going to bring this in, then everybody has to have access to it at the same time, and it's simple to do. You don't have to run off and make copies or anything like that. You can just upload it.
And all you need is one lawmaker willing to email it to you if nobody else wants to.
Don't give away your sources.
Yeah. Okay. Pilot program, two committees. How long before the General Assembly adopts a paperless?
I think it all depends on how things go. I think it's going to be a while before the General Assembly goes paperless.
I think it'll be next session.
I think
next
it's when session. They get a good solitaire game.
Two next states are paperless session. Already. West Virginia.
Hawaii.
And Hawaii.
It'll never be completely paperless here, but it'll be close next session.
All right. Before we go on to the final item, I just want to say hello to Rebecca Piercy here, sitting in for the first time today. You are John Gregg's campaign manager.
Yes.
John Gregg, the Democrat running for governor. Tell me this, the issues we've been talking about this week, right to work and Republican majorities. If you're running a Democratic campaign, how big a hill do you have to climb?
We've got a big hill. It's going to be an uphill battle for us, and we knew that going in. This right to work is certainly an extra hurdle on our path towards November, but I think that, you know, John is well-versed in State House, sort of the way things work there, maneuvering.
How important are the unions as a Democratic base in this day and age?
You know, Indiana's lost a lot of union membership, but this base of support is still very important to us for victory.
It's not what it once was.
No,
right?
It's not. There's no question about that.
And it continues to decline. Will passage of right to work speed that decline?
Absolutely. Yeah. Fairly quickly, I think.
You know, I got to say one thing though, Jim, if I may break in for just a second. You know, just because the number of union members has declined, because the number of jobs that are available in that field are in those fields is reduced, doesn't mean that the sympathy necessarily for folks who would have been members of union is diminished. I think that that's what the unions are banking on, and in large part what the Democrats in the House especially are banking on.
I just met Rebecca before the show, but I have to tell you, I think John's smart to hire adult supervision like this.
Thank you, Mike. I think
easy to agree to that. Finally, Indiana native Tony Stewart won his third NASCAR Sprint Cup Championship this week. There was a celebration in his hometown of Columbus where people are still talking about the amazing finish to the season. Some say that the win for Stewart is almost like a win for the entire city.
One of the greatest things ever happened to him. He's been waiting for this for a long time, especially with his new team and everything like that. It just means the world to him to get where he's at today. He's made his home here in Columbus and built him a new house.
Tom Weatherall there of Columbus. Mike McDaniel, did Tony Stewart do the right thing by leaving IndyCar?
Apparently. He's made a lot of money. He's made a lot of money, and he's proven he's a racer, and this one was like the Columbus winning the Super Bowl. It was phenomenal, and we should all be proud of Tony Stewart. He is a Hoosier through and through, and he can drive them. He can trade paint with the best of them.
He had a heck of a finish to the season.
Yeah, you know, you think of when leaving IndyCar, you think sort of that's an Indiana thing, IndyCar. But, I mean, this guy could not be any more about Indiana. I mean, he stayed here. He's kept his business here. And so, I mean, he's a great thing for the state.
It's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Rebecca Piercy, Republican Mike McDaniel, Leslie Weidenbender of Franklin College, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. Just go to Hoosier TV and look for Indiana Week in Review under News. I'm Jim Shello of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in a thousand different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the thousand and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.